These are the PCORI methodology standards. This category is about standards for adaptive and Bayesian trial designs. It was prepared by and will be presented by Dr. Gary Rossner, a biostatistician in the Department of Oncology.
Hello, this is Gary Rossner. In this module, I'll be providing an overview and background information. The skills that you should be able to apply after this module include formulating appropriate prior distributions for Bayesian trial designs and understanding what Bayesian trials are. Clinical trials have been designed generally under what's called a frequentist framework. We will be discussing how these trials have been designed, what the difference is between these traditional designs and adaptive or Bayesian clinical trials. And in order to understand those differences, we need to first look at what Bayesian statistics are and what are Bayesian considerations for the study's design and analysis. Good clinical trial design will often, if not always, include randomization of treatments to patients. The randomization ensures that there are no systematic differences between the treatment groups in the study. Subjects who are participating in the study and assigned to each treatment group are all drawn from the same population, and the only differences between these groups can be attributed to the treatments that were assigned by this external process called randomization. Patients are not selecting their own treatments, where that selection may reflect some differences from one patient to the next. Instead, it's done by an external mechanism. From start to finish, a randomized clinical trial will proceed along this path. First, one will define the purpose. Quite often, this involves specifying one primary hypothesis or several hypotheses that the trial will be designed to answer. Then one will design the trial, which will include writing a protocol. The protocol will include all steps necessary for one to follow in order to carry out the clinical trial. Everything from the treatments, how the treatments are formulated, if they're drugs, how often or frequent patients will be evaluated. And for our purposes, what's most important is the plan for the analysis and any adaptations that will take place during the course of the trial. Those items need to be specified clearly in the protocol before the trial begins. Then one conducts the trial. One enrolls patients, treats the patients, and follows the patients until the planned end, or if it's an adaptive trial, until a decision is reached that the trial should conclude. Once the trial has completed and all data have been collected, one will analyze the data and write up the results and publish them to inform the clinical community as well as patients about the outcomes. The statistical considerations for randomized trials include the following. The general considerations that are in all protocols of randomized clinical trials include the definition of the primary endpoint as well as any secondary measures, the methods that will be used to analyze these primary and secondary endpoints, a justification for the sample size based upon the analytic methods being proposed, as well as plans for monitoring the accruing data throughout the course of the study and details about any interim analyses that may be performed. Typically, a trial will have a primary hypothesis that concerns the treatments being evaluated in the study. We define statistical, null, and alternative hypotheses. The null hypothesis will typically state that there is no difference among the treatments, whereas the alternative hypothesis will state that the treatments differ. If there are two treatments being compared, then one can have a two-sided or a one-sided alternative. The one-sided alternative would say that, say, the experimental or novel treatment is superior to the standard treatment. A two-sided would just say that the two treatments differ without indicating any hypothesized direction of that difference. Sometimes trials will randomize patients to more than two treatments, and then the alternative may be more complex. One determines the sample size for a randomized trial to ensure adequate probability of rejecting the hypothesis of no treatment difference, the so-called null hypothesis, in favor of the alternative, when there is a predefined clinically meaningful difference between the treatments. That is, one wants to ensure adequate information to make a determination that the treatments differ when, in fact, they do differ. The sample size calculation is based on a statistical test that's determined by the primary endpoint and the methods proposed for analyzing that endpoint. Most published accounts of randomized clinical trials include statements like p less than 0.05. To understand what that statement means, we need to recall that the simplest statistical design is based on testing a null hypothesis against an alternative hypothesis. The null hypothesis in a randomized trial almost always corresponds to the statement that there is no treatment difference. The alternative hypothesis, on the other hand, may either be one-sided or two-sided. If one-sided, it might say that treatment A, for example, is better than treatment B. Two-sided hypothesis may be that the two treatments do not have equivalent effects without indicating in which direction or which treatment is better than which, just that they're different. The P in the statement P less than 0.05 is shorthand for probability. Specifically, it's indicating the probability of computing a test statistic as extreme or more extreme relative to that null hypothesis of no treatment difference as what was observed and computed based on this study's data. Extreme departures from the null hypothesis of no treatment difference will correspond to values of the test statistic that have very low probability under this state of nature. That is, how likely is the observed test statistic if there is no treatment difference? Looking at the figure to the right, there is a hypothesis associated with the assumption of no treatment difference, and the test statistic may take the shape of a bell-shaped curve, a normal distribution. In this example, any test statistic values that are positive in increasing value to the right would correspond to treatment A being superior to treatment B with respect to the primary endpoint. On the other hand, if treatment A is inferior to treatment B, then the test statistic will have negative values, and the more negative the value, that is, the larger in absolute value the test statistic, but it has a negative sign, the more inferior treatment A is to treatment B. As you can see on the curve, larger values, that is, values that move away from zero in either direction, fall under the tails of the distribution, meaning that they have lower probability than values closer to zero. Values of the test statistic closer to zero will fall under the curve that has highest probability. In fact, the peak probability is at the value zero, which corresponds exactly to the null hypothesis of no treatment difference. The traditional design considers error probabilities. The practice has developed that one would consider the probability of committing particular types of errors with regard to the null and alternative hypotheses. Type 1 error corresponds to rejecting the null hypothesis in favor of the alternative in error. That is, we reject the null hypothesis when the null hypothesis actually is true. Type 2 errors correspond to the error of not rejecting the null hypothesis in favor of the alternative when the alternative is true. The concept of statistical power is 1 minus the probability of a type 2 error. When we design studies, we typically set the probability of a type 1 error at some small number, quite often 5% or lower, and then we pick a sample size that will give us high probability of rejecting the null hypothesis in favor of the alternative when the alternative is true. So sample size is based on the desire for a small type 2 error probability or high statistical power when there is a meaningful difference between the treatments, say. That is, one treatment is clinically better than the other. Some argue against focusing on controlling these two error probabilities when designing randomized clinical trials. For example, these error probabilities say nothing about trying to minimize the number of patients who receive inferior treatments. Some would argue that, in fact, it may be quite important that we design our trials to minimize the number of patients who receive inferior treatment. One way of accomplishing this is to adapt the randomization in favor of better performing treatments as the study data accrue, and we learn whether one treatment is in fact superior to the other. The Bayesian statistical inferential paradigm provides a framework for using the accumulating information to update our uncertainty measures, and we can use that information to alter the randomization probabilities. What's the difference between Bayesian and frequentist statistical inference? Well, frequentist inference, that is, inference along the lines of the error probabilities we just discussed, asks questions such as, given the null hypothesis, how likely is it that we could observe what we did observe or any other outcomes that are even farther away from the null hypothesis than the observed outcome? That is, the frequentist is conditioning on a given hypothesis, typically the null hypothesis of, say, no treatment difference, and asks the question, how likely are observations when there is no treatment difference? A Bayesian, on the other hand, will condition on what was observed and will ask the question, given what we observed, how likely is it that there is truly no treatment difference? So the Bayesian is conditioning on the observations, on the data. What do we know about the treatment effect given the data from the trial? Some advantages of Bayesian inference include the following. The Bayesian asks the question, how likely is the null hypothesis given the observed outcomes? This seems a natural question to ask at the end of a clinical trial. It's also easier to incorporate external information, such as data from parallel trials that may be looking at similar questions or similar treatments, historical information relating to the treatments in the trial, and so on. The Bayesian follows a learning paradigm where you conduct an experiment, collect data, and then use these data to update your uncertainty, hopefully to reduce the uncertainty relating to particular hypotheses or theories. It's easier to account for the various sources of uncertainty that enter into a trial using a Bayesian framework. Inference seems more natural because it follows this learning or evolving knowledge paradigm. And it also forms the foundation for decision-making in the presence of uncertainty, which ultimately is what we end up doing anytime we're going to make a decision about how best to treat a patient. Some criticisms of the Bayesian approach exist, however. One criticism reflects on the need to specify upfront some prior belief about the treatment differences. Different prior probability distributions may lead to different posterior inference. That is, how I incorporate the data from a randomized clinical trial based on my prior beliefs may lead me to conclude something different than you. It turns out, however, that with increasing sample sizes, the influence of the prior distribution is minimized, and ultimately, we may both converge on the same conclusion. Another criticism is the complexity that's often part of carrying out Bayesian inference. It becomes more difficult to design a study because of this complexity and to carry it out. Newer computational methods and programs, however, have allowed for carrying out Bayesian inference to address far more complex problems than used to be the case. And in the course of carrying out and designing an adaptive clinical trial, one will use these more complicated programs, but one will explain explicitly what one did to allow other individuals to follow suit and be able to reproduce the results. There are three main components that go into Bayesian statistical inference. The first is the prior distribution. This is a probability distribution that characterizes our initial uncertainty about the likely values of key parameters of interest. For example, what would be the average change in blood pressure that we might expect to see in the population of patients we'll be treating in our clinical study? The next component is the likelihood or the sampling distribution. This, again, is a probability distribution that characterizes the variation or heterogeneity in outcome measures between patients within our population. This probability distribution typically conditions on parameters such as the parameters about which we wish to make inference. Finally, there is the posterior distribution. This is on the same scale as the prior distribution. Namely, it characterizes our current uncertainty with respect to these key parameters of interest, such as the change in blood pressure after receiving treatment. The posterior distribution is an updated characterization of our uncertainty after integrating the sampling distribution, that is the data, with our prior uncertainty. Hopefully, we now have greater certainty about what the likely treatment effect may be, and we can use this for inference about how one treatment compares to another
in our clinical trial.
The standard rules of probability calculus say that the posterior distribution is just proportional to the probability in the data times the prior, that is, the likelihood times the prior. So, for example, we go from some hypothesis about whether or not there's a treatment difference or what that treatment difference equals. We multiply that prior probability times the sampling distribution, which characterizes the probability associated with observations assuming no treatment difference. And in the end, we can make new probability statements about the probability that there is no treatment difference given the data that I collected. An important Bayesian concept is the predictive distribution, which is what's the probability distribution for the next observation I will see given all of the data I now have in hand. Notice that no parameters are in this probability statement. Instead, we're just making predictions for future observations based on our current observations. For example, we might want to predict the probability or characterize the probability associated with the next patient's possible outcome if the patient receives treatment A as opposed to treatment B. Or we may wish to project the probability that the randomized trial we're now running will show a significant treatment effect if we continue accruing and following patients. This is extremely useful for adaptive designs. Also, with predictive distributions, we can compute an expected utility or an expected loss function, which is important for study design, comparative effectiveness research, and medical decision making. Let's consider an example that we may well be familiar with that will show how Bayesian inference works. In particular, let's look at diagnostic tests. When one is developing a diagnostic test, one estimates the test's sensitivity and specificity. Sensitivity is the probability that the test result is positive given that the condition is present. The specificity is the probability that the test result is negative given that the condition is not present. In symbols, we may simplify this to say that the probability that a positive test result, T plus, given the disease or condition is present, D plus, is the sensitivity. We conduct studies to estimate the sensitivity and specificity of the test in groups of subjects, a known fraction of whom have the condition, with the remainder of these individuals not having the condition. When we apply the diagnostic test in the clinic, however, we're interested in the predictive value of the test. For example, the predictive value positive of the diagnostic test is the probability that the patient has the condition given a positive test result. Bayes' rule, part of probability calculus, shows how sensitivity and positive predictive value are related. The predictive value positive is the sensitivity of the test times the prevalence of the condition in the population divided by the overall or marginal probability that the test is positive in the population. The form of the equation is shown below. We see that the sensitivity is in the numerator on the right side of the equation, and the positive predictive value or predictive value positive is on the left side. Bayes' rule describes exactly how we can make this transformation, and it is Bayes' rule that underlies Bayesian inference in randomized and adaptive clinical trials. Namely, it tells us how we take our prior probability about treatment differences and updates them to our posterior probabilities about treatment differences. In the equation, there was a vertical line that is symbolic for conditional probabilities. To illustrate what conditional inference is, consider that we have two dice. One dice has four sides, and each side is numbered sequentially 1, 2, 3, or 4. The other die has 20 sides, and each side is numbered consecutively from 1 to 20. I'm going to pick one of the two dice and roll it, and you cannot see or hear which one I roll. I tell you I have chosen one of these two dice randomly, rolled it, and it came up 12. Which is the die I rolled? Well, since only one of the two dice has sides with numbers larger than 12, I must have rolled the 20-sided die. So given the observation, we know which of the two dice I rolled. That is, we condition on the data and we make inference based on that. Suppose I rolled a 3. Then which of the two dice did I roll? Well, if we assume that I chose each one with equal probability, that is, there's a 50-50 chance I chose the four-sided die, then the probability of getting a 3 with the four-sided die equals 25%, that is 1 out of 4, and the probability of getting a 3 with the 20-sided die equals 5%, 1 out of 20. I've assumed that each side of each die comes up equally often as any other. Now, I also have assumed that I'm choosing one of these two dice randomly, meaning that with equal probability. So the probability that I chose the four-sided die and rolled a 3 equals 1/2, namely the probability I chose the four-sided die, times 25%, the probability of getting a 3 given that I rolled the four-sided die. And that equals 0.125, or 1/8. The probability that I chose the 20-sided die and rolled a 3 equals 1/2, again, the probability of choosing that 20-sided die, times 5%, the probability of getting a 3, or 0.025. Therefore, the 4-sided die is 5 times more likely than the 20-sided die, given that I rolled a 3. So given the data, I have now updated my probability, or you've updated your probability, that I chose the 4-sided die from 50-50 to 5/6. That is, the posterior probability that I chose the 4-sided die, given that I rolled a 3, is 5 out of 6, and the posterior probability that I chose the 20-sided die, given that I rolled a 3, is only 1 out of 6. So instead of equal odds, our posterior odds in favor of the 4-sided die is now 5 to 1. So we're conditioning on the data for our inference about which die I rolled. Bayesian inference is using the same methodology, condition on the data to make probability statements and update our knowledge about treatment effect. In summary, in this module, we've talked about the statistical considerations that go into designing and writing protocols for randomized clinical trials. We reviewed frequentist approaches to trial design, focusing on controlling type 1 and type 2 errors, which are the primary concepts that are used when designing randomized trials from a frequentist standpoint. We've also discussed and illustrated key concepts of Bayesian inference. We talked about and defined what a prior distribution is, what the likelihood or sampling distribution of the data is, how the posterior distribution reflects updating our uncertainty by combining information from the data with our prior uncertainty, and we define the predictive distribution, which is used to characterize uncertainty about outcomes for future patients given the data currently in hand. Thank you.